sea on diesel boats, they call us bubbling. Our blood is laced with diesel smoke, we're sailors to the end. Our diesels wind through the salty brine until we take her deep.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Pair of Kings podcast. I'm your host, Saul Thompson. You can find me on Instagram at Saul Thompson. I'm joined this week not only by my wonderful co-host.
I am Michael Smith. You can find me on Instagram at @_smithstagram.
And we are joined this week by none other than Hung La of the brand Ludan. We've talked about them multiple times in the podcast before. We are both huge fans, and we are both very excited to have Hung on the podcast to talk about his brand, his upcoming collection, and some of the things that he's been doing within his social media brand as a whole. How are you, Hung?
Great. Really excited to meet you both and excited to be on this podcast. So, my brand is called Ludan. It's Ludan_official. And yeah, that's me.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Really glad to have you here. Yeah. Should we keep it traditional, launch right into a fit check?
Let's do it.
See what everyone's wearing. All right. Saul, do you want to lead us?
Sure, I'll set the tone. I've got my GmbH Asics. They are not long for this world, as I keep talking, you know, keep mentioning, as they are completely cooked, for lack of a better term. I have my Studio d'Artisan matcha denim that I've been wearing through, the belt that I got from Self Edge, and then a vintage Yves Saint Laurent, like terry polo, that has also been great for summer. We'll usually go swimming, and we'll jump right out of the pool and throw it on, which is kind of nice.
Nice.
Pretty simple. I feel like it's becoming a uniform for me, which is polo shirt and jeans, but I'm becoming okay with it. I wouldn't like to consider myself a uniform dresser, but I guess we're coming around.
Nice.
Michael, you wanna? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wearing my usual Crocs because I'm in the house. I don't know if it's like corny to wear band merch to the concert, but I'm wearing Ludan fat jeans that Fiona got me for my birthday. A Balenciaga t-shirt that says I love techno on the back, and then just this Rick overshirt.
Nice.
It's like a silk cotton. But yeah. How about you, Hung? What you got on?
This is the first time I've done a fit check, so I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm wearing Balenciaga clogs, kind of.
Oh, nice.
Sliders. I have a Comme des Garçons jacquard polyester with a little star kind of jacquard shorts. And then my other brand, Quiet and Editions, one of their kind of fetish tees.
Nice. No, you did great. You killed it. Beautiful first fit check.
Thank you.
I like that. Real cozy. What clogs are they?
Like, I don't know. I don't know, to tell you the truth. They look a little bit like they've been like air molded. I don't know the model. I can show you if that helps.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're like those are cool. Real classic. Nice.
That's awesome. So
should have been wearing Ludan. I was a little bit off guard. I should have. I mean, I do have a full collection here, so I can put some stuff on it.
Yeah, you got the whole. Let's just play dress up. I don't know. Are you supposed to wear like the brand to the brand interview?
I don't know. It's such a weird thing nowadays, because it's like creative director, you know, founder, designer. That role has shifted so much today. You know, it's like the amount of selfies that I feel like I'm obliged to post is like, this is not, when I was in fashion school, this was not part of the curriculum. It was like the quiet kind of, like, considered designer tortured behind in his studio. Now it's like, can I do a TikTok in my studio? Like, can I pour some paint on myself to get a couple likes, right? It's like the game has changed so much. And I guess I'm of the generation that I've seen before social and after. So it's really interesting to kind of see how fast things move in the way that people communicate. But I think for me, like, I love to wear Ludan, and I wear the clothes because I do a lot of the fittings. So part of it is selfish in like, I want cool shit. Like, I'll design cool shit for myself so I can wear.
I feel like my favorite form of designer is always one who like makes clothes for themselves. Like, this is the stuff that I want. And then it just like happens that it also works for other people. Like, I feel like that selfishness is good.
Helmut is kind of famous for that. Like, he would always say, like, I couldn't find any cool clothes for myself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like that's the best way to approach it. I feel like it's very authentic, very sort of natural, right? It doesn't feel like forcing a square peg into a round hole. It's just, you know, it is what you are. It sort of stems naturally from what you're interested in.
What about you guys? Have you ever tried to make your own clothes or self-style, or like how does that work for you guys? Like I know you guys dig into it in your podcast all the time, but like I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of the philosophies of like kind of how you choose your clothes.
I always refer to myself as a mannequin because I love everyone else's clothes, but I don't think that like I've never reached a point where I was like, oh, this is something that I need that I can't find someone else doing better than me. And it's not, I don't know. It's like, I don't have the push to design clothes. I really like seeing everyone else's. I'm just a critic, I think.
Yeah. I describe myself the same way. Like what coaches don't play, you know, I'm on the bench. Yeah. I'll put on something nice. I'll show up to the game. I'll root everybody on, but I, you know, put me on the court and I'm going to be all turned around.
Teddy Roosevelt has a famous quote about the man in the arena. Do you guys know this one?
Yeah.
No. Like the one that's in the arena who's bloody and scarred and kind of gets poked by the bull, you know, like, yeah, you guys know it. Sorry.
Essentially, if I remember correctly, it also sort of talks about critics and how it's very easy to like fling insults or critique things when you're not really, you know, walking the walk or talking the talk.
I have heard that. Yeah, I guess I don't fling insults. I just I fling compliments, and then you know, neither of us works in fashion. We just watch from the outside, and yeah, it's nice.
I mean, I think it's like I love villains, so I'm not opposed to haters or insults. So like I have tough skin, so I love to kind of, you know, try to keep it real
That is actually something we wanted to talk about, that you reference a lot of villains and you talk about like villains being a big source of inspiration. What's the draw there?
I don't know. Growing up, I was always an outcast, right? Like kind of Vietnamese American family, first generation born, DMV, so suburbs of Washington, D.C. And I just didn't identify with the Asian culture at large growing up. So I kind of rebelled, kind of into skating, early hip hop, kind of like grunge, like early kind of like late metal, I guess, like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, like those were kind of like aspirational kind of music. And so for me, I was always an outsider. I've just always identified with kind of that villainous backstory. I'm the type of guy that loves to see the rise of the villain and then just turn it off because like I know it's not gonna end well for my favorite guy. I don't know why. Like I just feel like villains have more style, like they have kind of a more interesting backstory. There's always like circumstance, like villains with depth. I'm not talking about like flat villains, like I'm talking about like psychological kind of deep kind of like these backstories that allow us to sympathize and understand how misunderstood they are. And that's kind of how I've always felt. I don't know, like if you guys kind of, if you relate more to the hero or the villain, or if you think it's necessary to be so polarizing, or if heroes and villains are even necessary. In fact,
I was just going to say, I think in fashion, there is definitely a lean towards wanting to be the hero or be beautiful or sort of be almost angelic. And I mean, recently as well, there's been an embrace of the opposite, but it almost leads too far into almost being campy evil. And I like the sort of, again, like, you know, trend within recent media, especially with giving villains backstory and giving them motivations and actually, you know, it's not just dastardly guy who straps a bomb to a train or something like that. there's a motivation, there's a reason why they're doing everything. And I think that more context in those situations lends, both in fashion and in media, to better characters and to better collections and to better clothes. So again, I wouldn't say I necessarily identify with either heroes or villains. I mean, definitely aspects of both. And I think that that's what makes, again, compelling heroes and villains. But I do like seeing well thought out and well fleshed out ideas from both sides.
I really like the like tragic villain kind of thing where there's like, there's a villain who's doing bad things, obviously, but there's this like you said, there's like more exposition to it. There's like a story that explains why it's happening. And there's like mm-hmm. something people aren't like understanding in it, I guess, mm-hmm. that I really appreciate. Who are some of your favorite villains?
So like we work a lot around villains at Ludan, but I think if we're talking about like all time, like best villains for me, it's kind of Bob from Twin Peaks.
Oh, yes.
All Hannibal right. Lecter.
Nice.
Silence of the Lambs. Villanelle from Killing Eve.
I haven't seen
that. I don't know that one.
Killing Eve was a series, a British series. It's about a female serial killer. It's really twisted. It's kind of this love affair with her, kind of the detective that is chasing after. I highly recommend that. Both the Jokers in the recent Batman. So the Joker, the film by Joaquin Phoenix, Joker, Heath Ledger was incredible, tortured soul. And then Frank Booth from Blue Velvet.
Nice. Bit of Lynch in there then.
Any of your guys, any favorites for you?
You recently had Arnold Schwarzenegger modeling for you, and it reminded me how much I like loved the Terminator as a kid, and also like specifically like how he looked and his like demeanor in that movie was such a big thing. And that's also interesting because that's someone who like between the first and the second movie he comes back as like a sort of an anti-hero. He's like he comes and like helps them out in the second one, but it's still the same like sort of, you know.
I thought you were going to take in a different Arnold direction. I know it's campy and the movies weren't that great, but the tragic hero, I think it's in what, Batman 2, the Michael Keaton one where he's Mr. Freeze.
Oh yeah.
That's a really good character. I was like, oh, he's going there. Yeah.
Mr. Freeze was a good one.
My favorite villain of all time. I have two, but I think number one, maybe a little bit more than the other, is Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
Oh yeah.
Who, like, completely steals the show. Like, you're watching it for him. You're not watching it for really anything else. And then if you could count it, Jack Torrance from The Shining. Awesome.
Two of my favorites. Anton Chigurh is like the epitome of evil. That haircut is just haunting on its own. It's just like for us, this like what for us and how we create fashion, these kind of characters just like there's so much inspiration and sources of like kind of, I don't know, spirit that we kind of investigate.
So something that's, you know, I've wanted to ask is, especially within movies and in media, I feel like heroes get a lot more screen time conventionally. And they're also able to display a much wider range of emotions, right? There is a tragic hero. There's redemption story. There's even a revenge story where you end up rooting for the hero. And villains don't necessarily get that same breadth of emotions. Is that something that you have encountered or sort of come across or are confronting through Ludan, through making clothes, sort of expanding that emotional reach, as it were, of a villain?
I think it's an interesting question, but so that was my kind of like top five kind of, and the way that we look at villains at Ludan is there's three pillars for the brand. Basically, there's kind of my kind of backstory, a love of well-dressed complex villains, and Asian identity. So there's a couple references kind of in Asian cinema that don't get as much love as kind of the guys that we talked about, but Ishii the Killer is one of them. Old Boy, and then Takeshi Kitano. And I bring up Takeshi Kitano because what you're talking about is the kind of the duality of kind of hero villain, right? Takeshi Kitano always talks about who's the good cop, who's the bad cop. He talks about the Yakuza with kind of a weird sense of humor. And it's always that kind of duality. So what's always interesting for me and Ludan, because traditionally kind of Asian stereotypes, you have one side of the spectrum where it's like hyper-masculine, kung fu expert, explosives, but there's no depth to that story. So yep. With Ludan, the ambition is like, we're trying to spotlight Asians, or we are spotlighting Asians, strong Asians, and kind of in media, in cinema, it's kind of been represented more on that hyper-masculine side. But what hasn't been represented fully is kind of that version of a man with death, that version of a man with his family, that version of a man kind of in his community. And like, for me, Takeshi Kitano is the one director that kind of speaks to that duality that Eastern culture is always referencing, kind of like yin yang, mud lotus, you know, all of these kind of opposing forces. And I think if we talk about the work of Ludan and our love of villains, it's always with a wink, and it's always with this idea of like, how can we tell stories with authenticity and really spotlight kind of untold angles of this man.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I feel like you have done that a little in real life with the city tour stuff, the like, you know, finding those like sort of rebellious subcultures and then, you know, delving a little deeper into them. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, this is one of our biggest ambitions, and it's a really kind of beautiful process, because basically it's using the brand as a vehicle for the community. Mm-hmm. So we did one in New York, and we worked with Bo and Go, who's one of the founders from Mood Ring, and Jay Kim, who's a motorcycle enthusiast photographer. He's a roadie. He's just a cool dude. And basically, we shot them in Ludan in their kind of environments. And we had an interview with them, and we had this kind of conversation that ID covered. And it was basically kind of, who are your role models? What do you feel like representation is today? What do you think kind of Asian identity is today? And it's really kind of this conversation. It's really using the brand to spotlight two specific characters and finding an Asian photographer, an Asian stylist, an all Asian crew to kind of put that together. Mm. And we've just done London. I can't divulge who it is, but it's really an opportunity to use the cities kind of as a backdrop for the conversation, because sure. The conversation about Asian identity in New York is different than it is in London. It's different than it is in Shanghai. It's different than it is in Tokyo, you know, and we want to do Chengdu. We want to do Manila. We want to do Saigon. We want to get the local flavors. And for example, like the conversation about AAPI in New York is very different than the conversation in Shanghai. They don't have lack of representation. All their social media is Asian faces. So it's just so nuanced, kind of this conversation about Asian identity. And it's a big challenge. And I think Ludan's ambition is to take it on and not treat it like Pan-Asian, is to be very specific about certain influences and others, but always trying to spotlight kind of the threads that tie us together.
Absolutely. So I guess immediately leading to that, can you share, I guess, examples, just anecdotes about traditional elements from Asian culture, media, you know, as a whole, that you really try to interpret or bring into your work? You know, whether that be traditional representation within media, just general sort of awareness of Asian identity in you know, the fashion world, or just, you know, over the world, as you sort of look and take Ludan to more of a global stage. You mentioned doing city tours sort of all over the world.
Yeah. I think the beginnings of Ludan, I think that's the best place to start, are kind of, it was born during lockdown. Mm-hmm. I live in London. Most of my family is on the East Coast in the US. So we weren't allowed to travel. I was really missing home and started cooking a lot of Asian food. George Floyd happened. There was all this reckoning about race and identity. I was doing a lot of meditation, and I realized that I never used my voice regarding kind of my personal history. Mm-hmm. So kind of like touching back on kind of my teenage years, which were quite formative, I kind of rejected most Asian culture. I grew up in this kind of Vietnamese enclave in the DMV, and very segregated between kind of weekends with the Vietnamese community and then school life with a predominantly kind of white or Caucasian community. And there was always this contrast. When I was a teenager, I chose a predominantly kind of white community. And kind of during lockdown, there was just kind of this reawakening and kind of a reckoning with kind of all of the internalized racism that I had for like kind of 20 years, and just understanding like there's a minority of kind of Asians in America, and it was Stop Asian Hate was just kicking off, and all of the protests, and I felt like I was being left out in a way, because I was in London, we had our own little movements, but there was community forming, and I thought, I've never used my voice in fashion before. I've never used my identity. I've never used kind of my own cultural kind of struggles. So all of the foundation started there. And for me, what I was realizing was that there wasn't an Asian male that was represented in a true way in kind of Western media. The spaces that were allowed for Asians in cinema and in music, in popular culture was kind of small. It traditionally is kind of the emasculated kind of Breakfast at Tiffany's guy, you know, shy, meek, subservient, the kind of karate, kung fu, explosive expert, not a lot of depth, just kind of kamikaze style, right?
Mm.
And there's so much more diversity there. There's so much more space for kind of stories with depth. And kind of the origins of the first collection were imagery from Katsumi Watanabe and George Hasaguchi. I don't know if you know these street photographers, but they're quite famous in Japan. And they celebrate this kind of Asian masculinity that I know very well. It's kind of a little bit dubious, a little bit dodgy. Ludan means dangerous man. It's basically a man who you don't want to take home to your parents because he gambles, he drinks, he smokes too much. the Western equivalent would be kind of like Brad Pitt in Fight Club, like a bit too much, right? There's that kind of dude in Asia, but we don't really see him in the world. So I wanted to kind of start a brand around that villain, around Asian identity and spotlight around. So collection one, the first collection we did was really around that character. And then I was really into kind of like Yoji Yamamoto, kind of like gangster kind of coats, 90s, like all of that stuff. Kitano kind of was a big influence in that. And that's kind of how the collections, the first collection started. Collection two was kind of a continuation of that, since we did an Essence exclusive launch, and then we sold to some shops shortly after. It was kind of still ends of COVID. Collection three was the first ones we opened up to kind of wholesale shops, and that was really investigating like Asian Miami Vice is what we call it. Like there were all these kind of films, these TV shows in the 80s and 90s. Bad Cops was, I think, one of them. Investigating these kind of like not 80s volumes and kind of these who's the good cop, who's the bad cop, who's the villain, who's policing who. Mm-hmm. Collection four was really investigating Bozozuku culture. So kind of motorcycle gangs in Japan in the 70s and 80s, kind of this fierce rebellion, kind of these kind of, I guess, like defiance and kind of not succumbing to kind of kind of, I don't know, like, how do I say it? Like authority. And then the latest collection, we really investigated like workwear, like Japanese workwear. I don't know if you're familiar with Tobi culture or Tobi Zubon. It's like kind of these kind of balloon shaped pants with paint splatter. So there's always kind of this angle that we're trying to spotlight. There's different lenses of the same character that each collection speaks to. It speaks to kind of a core of like this defiant, this rebellious, this outsider kind of villain. But he doesn't get a lot of love and he's kind of known in Asia, but he doesn't get a lot of love outside of that. So that's kind of the ambitions of Ludan in a nutshell, in terms of like kind of investigating traditional elements. And it's not like we don't work like, oh, like the like kimonos or like aozais. It's not that literal. We're looking for specific kind of nuanced subculture, whether it's like gang codes or motorcycle flags or Japanese raw denim or kind of like camouflage that's kind of been laser cut, or we love animal motifs, we love anything with snake prints. Like it's more nuanced than that. It's more like this season collection five, it's more like he's a construction worker during the day and he loves to have his big snake bell buckle and phoenix print shirt while he goes to sing karaoke at night, right? It's like we're digging in. It's not your basic kind of like I want to do like tie fisherman pants, like these literal things that everyone knows. It's about spotlighting specific stories. Sorry, I spoke for like 10 minutes.
No,
that's awesome.
That was a perfect summary. This snake print stuff is some of my favorite Ludan stuff.
Yep.
Not a question, just a like the jeans with the snakes that are like wrapped around the legs in like perfectly overlapping pattern. Those are great.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's really cool stuff. I think so. Tentatively, if our time lines up correctly, the day that this episode comes out, there's supposed to be a new collection dropping for you.
Yes. This is collection four, autumn winter 2023.
Nice. So this is the cops. Was that? This is the like police.
This is the
where did I get that?
Black Emperor collection. So the Bozuzuku motorcycle.
Bozuzuku motorcycle. Right. That's really cool.
So this one, if I can dig in a little bit, it's really about kind of gang culture and kind of community and fierce loyalty and pride. So there's a lot of kind of like symbols of like, kind of like we dug into some flannel. There's some really cool like oversized flannel, like Eazy-E was on the board and Snoop Dogg, like kind of like this West Coast oversized. We love oversized kind of baggy, like really kind of almost too big shapes and kind of playing with proportions.
That's really cool. So when you put up a vision board or a mood board for a collection, are there people or characters that you see coming up sort of quite often? I know you try and spotlight characters, but are there any sort of commonalities throughout the collections?
You know, what's been interesting is like, because we style our own, the first two collections were styled by Jason Ryder, who's a really talented stylist in New York. But collection three, collection four, and collection five, we styled on our own. And what we realized was that certain characters started to reappear. So we put out this kind of gangster family tree on our Instagram, and it's quite interesting because like we like Leia and myself, so Leia Dickley is my partner, we met first in Antwerp at the Antwerp Academy. We've been together for almost 20 years. We started Quiet Ann Editions together and we do Ludan together. Quiet Ann is more hers, Ludan is more mine. But we kind of, we're really into building character. So much like kind of like storyboarding and kind of writing scripts, we have a board in the office of kind of like characters. So certain characters, either fictional or real, reappear, like Ishii the Killer, or kind of Eddie Huang is on the boards, or Errolson is on the boards, and kind of Yoji gangsters on the boards, but it's kind of broken down into like different kind of categories. So it's like you have like some of the characters that come back are like, we have your Sunday gangster who's wearing baggy sweats and a kind of knit polo and always in kind of flip-flops. We have like the karaoke dude, which is the big snake bell buckle. We have the assassin. We have kind of the underboss. We have final bosses. So it's like, what's kind of interesting about the brand is like, we're digging into like, each season is another layer into specific characters.
So you brought it up. I have to ask, who are some of the final bosses? Because that just sounds so cool.
I think it's only me. I think it's only allowed to be me, the final boss. Like the team
final boss.
The final boss has to fit me, and it has to make me look even more of a badass. So hopefully we'll have some other kind of final boss. Maybe we can have teasing other brands I can fight as kind of creatives, like create a video game mashup with other final bosses. But for the moment, I think it's only me.
The Ludan video game?
That'd be really cool.
But you have to play as the villain and fight all the good guys.
That would be sick. So again, just out of personal curiosity, with all the talk about movies or media in general, correct me if I'm wrong, but you haven't done much video stuff. Are there any plans in the works for sort of large-scale video or long-form video?
We love to do video. It's just as a, like, we spoke about, like, all the, in the beginning of the call, all of the kind of responsibilities of a creative director today. And it's like, video is not something I've felt like I have a grasp on. We've been working on scripts. We want to do kind of, like, short gangster movies and we've been in talks with a lot of different people, but we haven't stepped into that realm. I think for me, to be honest with you, I love cinema so much that I'm just scared. Like, I feel like fashion dumbs down kind of video in not a great way. There's cool fashion video, don't get me wrong, but I feel like a music video is much cooler. Like, short film is much cooler. Like, I remember during early kind of COVID, everyone was doing fashion video. Everybody did fashion video.
Yeah.
And we're like, we don't want to do fashion video because it's still a fashion video. I mean, but I think we'd like to do it the right way. So if I can find the right villains, like, we definitely have the clothes for that. But I haven't dipped my toe.
That's so cool. So, you mentioned on your website as well that your brand is, and I quote, solely defined by those whose backs it adorns. Can you expand on that philosophy and tell us about the ideal Ludan wearer?
Absolutely. I think the biggest testament to the brand for me is when someone on social DMs me and says that this brand represents me in a way that no other brand has, or I see myself in this brand. And for me, when someone is throwing down their cash to buy a luxury product and choosing to kind of post about it on social, like, that for me kind of is a testament of, I'm bought in. I support what you do. I believe in your community. And for me, it's like, the community is still growing. It's like 17,500 on Instagram. TikTok we just launched. And it's really a community initiative. Like, when I talk about community, that's what this brand is about. We take kids from, we cast kids off of the social in London. We bring them in. We put them in the clothes. We do street casting on them. The city tours kind of spotlights kind of different community members kind of across the world. We post kind of on our social all of the kids who wear the clothes. All the collaborations that we want to do are promoting kind of Asian-owned businesses, Asian designers within the community. The first one will drop kind of in Shanghai in October of this year. So when we say that, like, it's defined by those who wear it, the people who support and buy the brand, kind of, those are the people who matter.
Absolutely.
You said you're starting a TikTok?
We have a TikTok. Oh, it's embarrassing. We just launched it. I'm trying to figure it. TikTok is such a different space, right? Like,
it's weird. Like,
it's just a different vocabulary, right? Like, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on how brands can be successful on TikTok.
I think most of the brands that I see doing, like, successful things on TikTok, unless they're already, like, huge brands, a lot of the brands who are, like, growing a following, a lot of the time it's kind of goofy. Like, it's like having your maybe not goofy, like, it doesn't have to be goofy, but it's more of a, like, your personality is much more at, like, being judged when you're doing video content. Because pictures and, like, you can really convey an aesthetic there, but when you're trying to like, just talk to people in front of a camera, it gets much harder to, like, you know what I mean? I feel like a lot of it comes in, like, just being a little more, like, genuine. I feel like there was an Instagram post that you had with, like, the gigantic pair of jeans.
I remember that one as well. It was, like, almost like double wide jeans.
These are, like, we call them maxi denim. And, like, for me, it's like, it's going to drop it in the collection C4 Autumn Winter 23. I think it's going to come more in the July drop, the second drop. But for me, it's like, it's reminiscent of, like, when you're driving across America and you're going to Goodwill and you just see on the wall, there's, like, that denim that's, like, way too large. And you're like, there's no dude that, like, what is the guy that wears that, right? It's like that it's just like, why, like, who is the human that wears that? And we just kind of love oversized stuff. So what we did is we reworked that, and basically it's just pleated in the front, so it kind of creates this kind of, like, samurai kind of, like, short kind of vibe, where it's just like you take this really, really giant pair of denim and then you fold it to the front, and then it creates this kind of triangular kind of dream.
I feel like stories like that, and, like, that thought process explanation, and then, like, this is something that we made. Here's the, like, idea it comes from, and then here's, like, what it turned into, and, like, what it sort of represents. That's your, like, TikTok gold.
Yep. I was gonna say that, or even just, like, going through some of the Ludan gangsters and just you know, explaining why they're influential or why you like them, or even just, like, what they're wearing. You know, videos that sort of delve into, hey, this is a style inspiration from a place that, you know, may not be widely known, whether it be Ishii the Killer. I scroll down. I think this is the teacher from Battle Royale. You know, whatever it may be. There are a lot of different sources that you draw from that I don't think would come to mind if you ask somebody who's a fashion inspiration, who is Asian, from the movies. They're not going to come up with the teacher from from Battle Royale off the top of their head. But I think that could be an interesting, you know, even if it is a 30-second video of explaining why you pulled that as a reference, would be great to watch. I think you have to use TikTok in one of two ways. It's either making original content for it that's very sort of high production value and using it as your main mode of disseminating video, or you have to use it as sort of a behind the scenes, I guess, for lack of a better term, like Finsta, where you're more explaining your process and, like Michael said, letting that personality shine through. I think people really want to connect with the people behind brands rather than just feeling like it's clothes, right? Like, take them, that's it. This is something I wanted to ask you about too, but the questions or the thoughts that you post on your Instagram, the sort of big red text, black background, they're very well written out, even just converting those to video and explaining, you know, your thoughts and getting people to weigh in. would be great for engagement. But I guess turning the question back onto you, when did you start doing those thoughts or those questions? Because you've done them about Asian designers. I believe there was a recent one about Peter Doe going to Celine. Where did he go?
Helmet. He went to
Helmet. Excuse me.
Oh, Helmet.
He's at Celine. Yeah. But yeah, so when did you start doing those? Because I've really enjoyed reading them, especially delving into the comments. I don't think I've responded in the comments myself, but I do find it really refreshing that it's taking a space that is generally pretty impenetrable, right? Like speaking directly to a designer and getting to have sort of a conversation, even if it is kind of, you know, just back and forth once. When did you start doing that? Sort of what was the inspiration behind that? And yeah, I just want to hear more.
That's a really, I've never really spoken about this. So thank you for asking. I think it's a very interesting question. So like before we launched Ludan, January of 22. So last year, it's still relatively new. Before that, I never used social media. I never had Facebook. So social is something that I'm learning. And I think with Ludan, with me kind of out front, I've been learning kind of how to kind of speak to the audience. And the best analogy that I got advice was from Steph Yotka, who used to be at Vogue. And she was like, it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall. You don't know what's going to stick, but you got to try. And then you got to learn. It's test and learn, right? Throw a lot of spaghetti at the wall and figure out what's going to work. So in the beginning, I thought what would be cool was like a mood board, right? Like let's just share my reference. But what I started to realize was that our audience really likes it when I kind of reveal something personal, mm-hmm. whether I show the collection on myself and the looks that I personally like, or when I'm like what I'm going to wear kind of out to an event, like that kind of behind the scenes into the studio is what they love. And kind of those thoughts were kind of an extension of that. Like as a designer, there's a lot of things that go through my head that doesn't really deserve space besides on social media. There's no need for me to talk about it. Some of the topics are thought-provoking enough, like why are there so many Asian students in the first year of fashion design but so little Asian creative directors? So that I've talked about in op-ed. But there's a lot of topics that are just like, this is on my mind, this is kind of the background of what goes on in my studio, in my head, while I'm designing collections. Let's throw it out there. Like I use it more of as a, like, this is what I'm thinking. Help me, you know, tell me like what you think. Cause I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I'm trying to navigate this space as much as the next person. And that's the brilliance of social media for me. It's like, throw it out there. Like, see who likes it, and it's kind of scary because I don't know how people are gonna react. And it's like some of them, people really like it, the way that I go through it is like, it's like this is important to me, this is kind of interesting, I hope you guys think it's interesting too. It's connected to kind of what we're doing and kind of how I think about shaping the brand.
I did want to say, I mean, in terms of social media and getting people to interact, I think there's two major things popped into my head about TikTok, especially with behind the scenes stuff, which is people want to engage with their brands. But because the norm for fashion brands is everything is sort of tightly kept within, you know, the space itself, but also people are inherently a little bit lazy. They do want to feel proud and connected to what they're wearing or putting on or choosing to buy. And so by opening, you know, yourself or opening, I would just say your personality or process, you make it easy for people to interact and engage with you. And I think that that's what these questions have done. And, you know, I think in most cases, if you as a designer say, hey, this is something I'm finding interesting or something I want to talk about, people are going to choose to engage in a positive way. And yeah, I think it's been great. I mean, I've really enjoyed, like I said, reading the comments and just reading your thoughts. Yeah, I think you have a great perspective and you're also well-written and spoken.
Thank you.
It's that thing in the beginning you were talking about that like people really need to see like a person behind the brand these days. Like for a brand to be successful, there needs to be this like human element to it. And I think that's what people really enjoy seeing. But it does also mean you really have to kind of like put yourself out there. And that is kind of scary.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, because there's a very personal angle to kind of Luden and kind of my own journey. But I felt like I was at a stage in my life and my career where like, because so much of like alienation as a teenager, and I think all teens go through alienation, it is about not seeing yourself in others, right? Not like I've written this op-ed, a second one, and it's really about kind of role models and kind of representation and kind of growing up in as a minority in America. We didn't have like Mr. Miyagi and Margaret Cho were representation for me in the 80s in America, right? There was Bruce Lee, there was no Tupac, there was no Kurt Cobain, right? So for me, like fashion can be so transformative if it represents a young person, if they can see themselves in a style, in an identity, in an ideology, in a fantasy, they can be transported and it can be a vehicle for them to feel a sense of belonging. And for me, my whole journey is reckoning kind of that journey of that teenager who felt alienated, felt all alone, didn't feel like there was anybody who understood him, and creating imagery that hopefully kind of is aspirational for the younger generation. And the most amazing thing about the journey that I've been on with Luden is kind of when I'm on calls with like Errolson from Acronym, or Eddie Huang has become a friend from Fresh Off the Boat, and he did a movie called Boogie, Edison Chen or Peter Ashley or Blake Abbey, like, and understanding the struggles of kind of Asian masculinity, visibility, and understanding that we're not alone in this struggle, that we've all walked into the room being the only Asian guy, you know, and understanding kind of different hierarchies and power plays, and creating space for not only us, but for the kids after us, you know? And I think that's the ambition and the vehicle of what Luden is really about.
That's amazing. Yeah.
What about you guys? Like, what were some of your kind of aspirational role models? Because I always talk about role models. Like who were kind of the people that kind of got you through, like that you could feel like they represent me, you know, while you were growing up?
I can jump in first. I read a lot of comic books growing up. And I really, it may sound a little bit corny, but I really looked up to Spider-Man. I really liked his ethos, the fact that he sort of always, I don't know, like he didn't jump to conclusions, which was super cool, especially in a lot of the newer Spider-Man books, or I'd say relatively newer, but I don't know, he seemed like a person, which was really cool. I was always a big fan of Spider-Man.
I was also reading a lot of comics, but I think I have a much worse like outcome of that in the I got really into Watchmen.
Oh no.
Which has like the worst superheroes, like they're all horrible.
Yeah.
And I started to really like as a teenager, I was like, that's like the epitome of cool, is being this like, you're doing what you think is like your personal good, but you're not really paying attention to it. It was obviously, I was not a great teenager. These days I think we're mellowing out a little bit, which is great. but yeah, I guess those are villains. Those are all villains.
Yeah.
But that was my like, and then I started to get into like fashion, and I think I mostly just started to like idolize people for like the aesthetics. Like I was really into like specific like Rick Owens influencer people for a while, and that was just like that's not always, I guess that's a problem. I don't have a lot of like personality based role models. I've always had like aesthetic based role models.
I think I almost had the opposite. I never really thought about fashion as a thing to engage with until like high school. I just wore, you know, whatever for I you know what 16 15 years of my life, and then I was like, oh wait, you know, I can wear cool clothes as well. And then that became sort of an obsession. But yeah.
What about communication of dress? When did that become something that was transformative or something that you aspired? Because you guys obviously love fashion, right? Like, what is it about kind of the way, the choices that we make in the clothes that we choose that is interesting to you?
I started getting into not fashion, but like I started to get obsessed with how I dress and like portray myself early high school. I was like a scene kid, like had a very specific look that I specifically liked, I think because I was in like a like suburban sort of farm town high school and I wanted to be like distinct, I guess. And then it sort of led into a love of like, from there I got weirdly into Tom Brown. That was a complete jump in the opposite direction. And then I started to drift back into like slightly edgier styles, but it was always sort of maybe not about like shocking people, but about being like interesting or like giving people something that's like kind of unusual to look at, I guess, was where I always started.
You enjoy that kind of nonverbal communication, the reactions that right? This is fundamental for me in kind of the very rudimentary kind of nonverbal communication of communication of dress.
It's exactly that. It's like any attention is good attention. I just want to like, I don't care if someone hates the way I look. It's more that I have like made an impact on them, even if briefly. That was sort of where it started, I guess.
I had a pretty different, excuse me. I was overweight for a long time, and my 10th grade, so it was like 15 or 16, lost, you know, a bunch of weight. I lost like 65 pounds, and pretty quickly realized, or not quickly, but you know, realized that I was more desirable or more attractive, and very quickly became not obsessed, but I very much wanted attention, I think, from women. And so I gravitated towards like what was popular and what was, you know, quote unquote sexy. So I got really into Saint Laurent because it was skinny and like that's what I thought would be attractive. And I was really into that for like 2 years.
But which period? Like Edie Sliman?
Yeah, exactly. So 2016, 2017, almost 2018. And then also just like what was popular at the time, which was streetwear and, you know, Supreme, and I never wore Bape, but I was into Bape, you know, those sort of things. As I got more into fashion and Yeezy as well, which was like a, you know, streetwear thing. But for myself, I really wanted to like, you know, almost like Michael said, any attention is good attention, except I wanted only good attention. So I was wearing like really skinny jeans. You know, what were the other things? Size small t-shirts. I could fit into like a women's small at one point, which is crazy for me. But since then, I've sort of realized I just like wearing what I am comfortable in and what makes me feel like myself. And I also don't really quite understand the disconnect between people in fashion who change their clothing to go out, or like, you know, put on a different outfit to go out and be seen. I just wear what I wear and I wear it everywhere. So, you know, I don't necessarily wear things that garner attention, but I wear things that I'm comfortable in and will last and I think are durable, and that I'm a fan of. And so that's sort of the things that I'm looking for, when I'm buying clothes. I also really like buying things that I don't have already.
You and I have very different, the completely different, like opposite ends of fashion, I think. So we try and cover what's in between.
Exactly. We can meet in the middle.
Because this is, Ludan is my first foray into menswear. I've always done kind of women's wear. And it's the men's space has shifted so much. It's gone through like so many different kind of priorities. Because it's like you said, it was like, for me, when I was getting into like fashion, like there was this term called metrosexual. It was like it was okay for men to like fashion. Before then, it was like three-piece suit, like Italian wool, like it was super conservative, right? And then you had like this like kind of moment where like activewear and streetwear and like all of these things started to bubble up, and it was okay for men to kind of enjoy fashion. And then kind of Kanye and hip hop and streetwear threw kind of men's fashion on its head, and kind of and like, yeah, like Vetements and like kind of destabilized all of these codes of what was proper kind of fashion. I think this moment is quite interesting, because I think like there's always headlines in BOF, is streetwear dead? It's an overexposed market, right? But yeah. There's still a desire, because I remember a time where there was a dress code. You had to wear a collared shirt and loafers to a restaurant, like dressing up to go to dinner with your parents. Like there was a dress code. If you didn't have that, then you could not get in a restaurant, right? Hmm. And then there was that whole like destabilizing what is luxury is actually like a ripped pair of jeans and a dirty tank top. That's true luxury, right? So like yeah. We've gone through all of this kind of like all of these kind of different iterations. And I think menswear is still trying to find its space in terms of like you said, like the balance between comfort and looking cool, looking different. Like, I think that's what's really interesting about the work that you guys do, is you kind of delve into these different niches, kind of like touching on what's hype, touching on what's cool. Because nowadays with social media, I think it's so difficult to be underground. And I still think Ludan is underground in a cool way. I'm going to be interested to see in a couple of years how things evolve, but it's such a different game, and things move so fast, and it's easy to talk about kind of all of these different subcultures and how things change. But I'm curious what you guys think, like what's really important in terms of like you guys are on the pulse of things. Like, what do you see as important for brands?
I'll say this quickly. I think that counterculture is really, really interesting. It's something that I read a lot about. It's something that I you know, in my spare time, I read or watch or whatever it is. I love examining it. And time and time again, every time you tell a group of young people, especially, like, you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to like that, almost without fail, there's a group of young people that do exactly what you're telling them not to do, and will lean into it, right? And I think that, especially within the U.S. now, and I'm talking about the U.S. especially, just as a case in point, but there's a huge sort of pushback against young men and women embracing their identities and acting in a way that is not sort of like okayed by some of the older generation. And that's prevalent within politics. It's especially terrible for women or people of color. It's unfortunate, but it's true. And I think it is really important for brands of people who have experienced the same thing, like you, Hung, and have sort of been told to act one way, or you have to be wearing a collared shirt and loafers to go into this restaurant, to be able to provide that alternative and provide that almost like authentic connection to those people who are saying, no, like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to engage, and I don't want to perpetuate, whatever's going on. And I think those are the best things. Brands, or people behind the brands, I should say, that stand for, hey, we're going against what we're being told. And it's not just, Shein or Zara or H&M sort of churning it out for a profit, but it's somebody behind it who's experienced it and says, follow me, or check this out, right? Like, I've walked your walk. I've seen what you've seen.
I think that just about sums it up. I always have this, like, it's a thing that we talk about a lot, where like counterculture becomes culture, and then you have to, like, you sort of go through this cycle where like things are counterculture, and then they get accepted by everyone, and then you now have to go back to what was originally culture, and then like people just keep like flip-flopping between what's like, because now it's weird to show up somewhere wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it becomes this like thing where you sort of you pivot back and forth, but it's like, like, it's streetwear, and then it's like suits, and then it's kind of like an edgy take on a suit, and then it's interesting to see that kind of cycle happen. But I also think that like trends aren't disappearing like they used to. Like, they just add a new one. Like there's now just someone from every sort of like trend that has previously been done, and they sort of like found what they liked, stuck with it, mm-hmm. and then kept going. And then so like there's always like, it kind of feels like we're not getting rid of things as much as we're just kind of like mm-hmm. adding on a whole new like genre. And you go to a party and you see someone dressed in like 2015 streetwear, and someone in like full Rick, and someone in like modern day Balenciaga, and like someone wearing Tom Brown. There's just like a little bit of like everything kind of happening. And I appreciate that. And I don't know, I like brands that can kind of like mesh between all of those, which is something I do feel like Ludan kind of does, where there's like, there's a little bit of kind of like, you can dress really like kind of grunge and like edgy looking, or you can have this very like I saw someone in a, I went to a wedding like a couple days ago, and someone was there in like a Ludan suit. And I think it's the first time I've seen one like out in the wild like that. And it looked so like, it just like fit in really well in something that's like kind of a more like formal event. So it was really nice to see.
I was going to say, like, the world doesn't necessarily, from like a sustainability or environmental standpoint, like we don't need new clothes in general. And so if you are going to make something, and I say this in general, not just like to a, you know, to you or anything, like make sure it's one, like quality, and it's being well made and there is attention to detail, but that it's saying something. It's not just like, yeah, this is my what, like white t-shirt. I'm doing elevated basics. I'm reinventing the XYZ, like, you know, do something interesting, change something, have a story behind it, do it for a reason. I'm very tired of seeing, you know, elevated basics or whatever it is, if you can't tell.
Yeah, it's really good.
So I'm interested, you're based in London, you grew up in the DMV, I think you mentioned. How do you make sure, how do you pay attention to make sure that your brand is resonating with sort of those subcultures or those groups within those spaces, or within those subcultures in general? Does it even need to, I guess, is the question, or are you okay with it sort of being popular outside of those cultures as a whole?
I think for me, I was talking with my partner, and there's kind of three stages that we go through as designers. It's like you have kind of ideation process, so the making, mm-hmm. and then you have the release, like you share your collection, mm-hmm. right? So there's always fear around releasing the collection. I think the purest moment is when it's still yours and you haven't released it, and you can form your own opinion before it's like you have sell-through reports, before you have a journalist writing about it, before you have 1,000 or whatever likes on social media. But your question is very valid. And I find myself at an interesting moment in my career. I'm 45 years old. There are assistants in our studio who are 20 years old who don't know what a fax machine is. And like, I'm trying to speak to those kids, right? Do I speak to them is a very valid question. The first collections, I feel like, were a little bit too nostalgic. I don't think they hit home in the way that I wanted to. They were really like a bit like old Asian dude kind of reference, like 90s Yoji. I don't know how many.
I love those leather coats. If you don't do airbrush leather coats again, I'm going to be so sad. Those were so cool.
Thank you. They did sell out, so that was great.
And Saul is too young to know what a fax machine is, so.
Yeah. That's still over my head. But so sad I didn't get one of those leather jackets. Those are so cool.
Yeah, well,
you'll get there.
But I think it's a really valid question, and it's I don't know. I don't know, to tell you the truth. It's like I'm always trying to test and learn, and this next collection definitely has more of a younger vibe to it. I think we touch on kind of more of this working class dude, like I said, like this Toby culture, just looking at and I feel like there's more kind of, we call them the tier four final boss pieces, and I think it really digs into I guess to answer your question, ultimately it's about authenticity, because there's a cultural narrative about the brand, there's a heritage about the brand. I think you wrote about sacrifice in the preliminary questions. There is an obligation to spotlight stories in a real and authentic way. Mm-hmm. And I just have to find it really cool. And I have to find it challenging and modern and kind of touching me in a way that feels kind of innovative, right? First and foremost. And then I show the kids in the studio and I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, that's for old people. And I'm like, okay, let's put that one on the shelf and we'll put it in the archive. But I'm constantly challenging myself and getting playlists from younger kids and trying to, because like we were saying, media moves so fast nowadays. Mm-hmm. There's no way to keep up with trends. So it's not about like I don't know. There used to be like these magazines like in the 90s and 2000s, like 70s is the new trend. Like for a year, like they would be like red is the color of the season and 70s is, so we're going to do bell bottoms. And like, it doesn't happen like that today, right? So it's like, what we have to do is do the most authentic version of the DNA, the most authentic version, and always push the story forward and challenge ourselves. So like, I think your question is really poignant. I don't have all the answers, but I like to think that what we do is really interesting and pushing the envelope. And there aren't other brands that do what we do, whether it's underground, whether it's niche, whether it's challenging, whether it's too oversized. Like these are things that I grapple with, but I feel like I'd like to tread this line of kind of challenging people instead of, like you say, doing elevated normality.
Yeah. I think you're doing a very good job.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So.
So we're going to start wrapping up. We've got a few smaller questions to ask you. One big question. We'll do song of the week, everything good. But before we get there, we have a wonderful community of our own. We call it the happiest place in fashion. It's the Pair of Kings Discord. It's a community online. Anybody can join. All you have to do is message us a keyword or phrase. We ask all of our guests from our guest episodes to give us that word or phrase, I guess, or photo or emoji, whatever it is, to send to us over on Instagram at Pair of Kings Pod. Hung, would you choose the keyword or phrase for this episode?
Villainous.
That's a good one. There you go. Okay, so we also have one last question we've asked it of every Pair of Kings podcast guest. It's our way of bringing you into the fold. It is sort of the palate cleanser, if you will, of the interview experience. So Hung, without further ado, if you had 1 year to eat a wooden door, hinges and doorknob included, could you do so? And if so, how would you do it?
1 year. Yeah, absolutely, I could do it.
Perfect. Good answer.
Anything I put my mind to, I'm up for the challenge.
Absolutely.
I love to cook. So I would do kind of some sort of Korean barbecue or Vietnamese barbecue and eat a little bit of the door every day.
Nice. That is beautiful.
Again, somewhat selfishly and personally, do you have any cool or interesting recipes that I should try? I've been gifted with a lot of free time this summer, so I've been cooking a lot. But
my most underrated ramen is Mazaman. Do you know this one?
No.
It's kind of like a dry ramen. Ooh. And it's Mazaman means mixed. So look it up. Mazaman ramen. Going to change your world.
Okay.
This looks nice. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I'm really excited for this.
Oh, with XO sauce. I just got a bunch of that.
Yeah.
XO sauce is great.
XO is like next level, like mind-blowing, yeah. Umami, like bomb. So have fun with that.
Nice.
I've been so irritated recently. I've been watching a lot of cooking shows and even at restaurants, and the word umami is just like beaten to death now, where I don't think it actually like means anything anymore. They're just like, oh, it tastes good. Umami.
Yeah.
Words have meaning, but XO is actual umami. Yeah, that one's real.
Great. Yeah.
All right. So we keep a running playlist throughout the season. We always invite guests to let us know what they've been listening to lately. Do you have a song you'd like to throw on?
Leon Bridges is a big supporter of the brand.
Ooh, so, Leon Bridges. Shout out Leon Bridges.
Yeah, any of his music.
Nice. Oh yeah, this is Wait, I've listened to this before.
Yeah, he's quite big. His big song is, let me...
River? Is that his big
River.
One?
River.
River, and then there's like Texas Sun.
Texas River Sun. Texas. Nice.
Cool. Michael, what's your song of the week? What have you been listening to?
Randomly remembered this band this morning again. You're a Woman, I'm a Machine by Death From Above, 1979. Do you know this?
No.
This is a band that, like, they were like the hot kind of edgy indie band from like 2003 to 2006, and then they broke up, and then they got back together, and then they broke up, and I think that every album since the first one has been garbage. They should have stayed broken up, but that's a very Pitchfork thing of me to say, and I'm sorry. But they're getting back together again, and they're playing a show, and I remembered them, so it's good stuff. It's just like two guys, and one of them's kind of like grinding a guitar a little too much, and the other one's yelling. What more do you need?
Can't say it sounds great, but it's interesting.
I'm not promising that it's great, but it's good. What do you guys saw?
So I would love to put this entire thing on. Daft Punk put Alive, their live set 1997, on as a 45 minute song on Spotify, which is great. But no, I will put Aerodynamic off of what album is that? Is it Daft Punk? Self-titled one?
Yeah.
Or Discovery.
You've really been on your Daft Punk shit lately.
I love Daft Punk. I've been saying it for so long. I got really bummed out that they broke up. I got pretty happy when they released the 10th anniversary version of Random Access Memories. So I've been listening to them a little bit more than normal, but they've consistently been one of my favorite bands since 2013.
It's been 10 years since Random Access Memories came out?
Yep.
Oh, God.
I'll tell you, I discovered Daft Punk. I was in a Urban Outfitters, and they were doing a big deal thing because they had just gotten the Random Access Memories vinyl in 2013. And I got that, and then I went home like the next week, and I listened to it basically straight. And then I watched Interstella, 555? Or maybe it's 4 or 5s, off of like some Pirate Bay rip. And ever since then, they've been one of my favorite bands.
Nice.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, Hung, take the floor. Let the people know where they can find you. Send some shout outs, whatever it may be. The floor is yours for, you know, however long you'd like it.
I really appreciate this space. I mean, I haven't done a podcast like yours before, and I was actually a little nervous, but you guys are really cool, and like I really feel comfortable kind of opening the space and speaking about kind of my journey and kind of where we're going. But we have a lot of really, really exciting stuff coming up. So next week we're launching, we did an AI campaign. So
I did want to ask about that. I'm sad we didn't get to that.
But we worked with this this creative photographer, Luke Nugent. It's uncanny kind of the technology. And what's really interesting is being able to subvert and trick the AI, because the AI is, if you type in Asian villain, it's going to come up with the most stereotypical racist thing you've ever seen, because it's an amalgamation of all the most base, the of kind of all the imagery that's tagged with that. So
yeah,
we spent some time around our DNA tricking the AI, and we're going to release a campaign on Sabukaru, Office, and Essence. We're going to release the campaign on the 23rd, so next Friday.
Nice.
We have a new collection, which is a fifth collection that we'll be showing in Paris. So look out on kind of our Instagram and our Vogue Runway. You can follow us on Ludan_official. We'll be kind of posting about kind of all the Paris events and all the people coming through. London City Tours will be coming out in July. I have a GQ cover story coming out the 22nd of June. So same day as your podcast. So big day.
Nice. For us
there. And we are doing a collaboration with a brand for Shanghai Fashion Week in October. So I'll be over there doing that. So
nice.
We got a lot on our plate. We're very ambitious. I'm loving kind of all the love from the community, and kind of celebrity kind of dressings have been really helpful for the brand. But I think kind of this story of spotlighting kind of this underrepresented Asian masculinity is really something near and dear to my heart. So I'm going to push that as hard as I can and eat a little bit of Dore every day. And hopefully we're all going to be stronger for it.
Beautiful. Love that.
I love it. Without you know, any more preamble, thank you so much, Hung, for joining us. This has really been a blast. It's only made me a bigger fan of the brand.
Yeah.
But without further ado, this has been the Pair of Kings podcast. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Pair of Kings Pod. You can email us with any business inquiries at pairofkingspod@gmail.com. I'm your host, Saul Thompson. You can find me on Instagram at Saul Thompson. And I'm joined this week not only by my wonderful co-host.
I'm Michael Smith, and you can find me on Instagram and I guess TikTok at _Smithstagram.
And none other than Hung La of Ludan. You can find him on Instagram at Ludan_official. One more time, this has been the Pair of Kings podcast. We are bringing you business as usual, tomfoolery as planned. We hope you have a great Thursday. Go check out the new Ludan collection. And as always, wear what you like and like what you wear. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Submarine. The mighty brass would sink our class. We are a dying breed. The voices high and shipmates cry the diesel.